Okay, I'm just going to...
Well, at least you've won the Stanley Cup quite a few times.
Long time ago.
We've never even made it. I thought we were going to make it last year.
Well, you guys had a pretty good run.
Oh, my God. Last year I thought we were going to make it because, you know, playing the Knights, the first-year team in the semifinal. Yeah. Thinking there's no way a first-year expansion team is going to go to the Cup.
Yeah.
And then the Jets won the first game, and I was already calling my buddy saying, I'm gonna come back to watch because when is Winnipeg going to make it to the Stanley Cup? And then they lost. So, c'est la vie, as they say.
So you were living in Australia, though?
Yeah, I've been there for 15 years.
So were you able to catch the games?
Yes,
there?
So Hockey Night in Canada is Sunday morning in Australia.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that you can get all the games pretty much.
Okay.
You didn't used to when I first moved to New Zealand. It was in 94. It was really hard to get content from North America.
Yeah.
But that's obviously
and Raptors
content.
Fan as well?
Yeah, I watched the last three games. Yeah.
Okay. That's the only three games.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah, my daughter plays basketball, so I have an interest in it. But I mean, the schedule is just, like, it's not, unless you're going to record the games, it's just hard to watch.
Yeah. I watched one game this year, and it was.
Did you watch the last game? Did you? So I watched the last three games, so it was slightly better. Yeah. But yeah, I. It's actually quite good for basketball. I didn't know that the first NBA game was played in Toronto. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Oh. And basketball's invented by a Canadian.
No way. Yeah.
I think in America, but he was Canadian.
I was in Vegas last week for AICPA Engage.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to catch the game at Caesars Palace.
Well, that would have been awesome.
So it was pretty wild.
So what was the mood like? Were people...
It was split, which is great.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people are on the Warriors bandwagon. Yeah. But anyway, we better talk shop.
Yes.
Otherwise, it'll all be about hockey and basketball.
Yes. We have about 4 minutes left, maybe.
you got plenty.
So, maybe you can tell me, like, your current role right now. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about your role.
So my role is running the go-to-market for the Americas, which is really running sales and marketing for the U.S. and Canada.
Okay.
So I don't run product but everything that's about taking the product to market.
Okay.
So the revenue number, et cetera.
Okay. And you're at the early stages of your role right now.
Yeah.
I think you sat on stage
30 days. Mm-hmm.
So what are your priorities right now? What are you focusing on? How are you getting immersed into this space?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can touch on that.
Well, generally, sort of the first 90 days, the first 30 days, I really focus on the people, who's working in the business, getting to know them, just as people, because I think it's really important that, you know, people don't quit companies, they quit leaders, and people don't work for companies or org charts or structures, they work for people. So that's kind of my first, and these aren't obviously in serial, they're in parallel, but in terms of just a priority. The next 30 days is really, which is where I'm about to go in now, which is really the product, the process, how we go to market. And then the next 30 days is pretty much getting like a beta version of what is the plan to actually to execute on that. So that's with obviously the team all together. That's kind of in the first 90 days. And then we'll end up with version one of kind of what we're doing, which to be honest will be an extension of what Kerry and the team have done to this point. Like the playbook is pretty established.
Yeah.
I think where we went a little amiss in the U.S. is we sort of flip-flopped a little on the playbook. So we started with partners, then went to customer, and really you have to do both at the same time, and that's when that's the sort of secret sauce. So about 2 years ago, that's where, you know, some of the team that had come out of New Zealand and Australia came over and really started to execute the playbook. And it takes time, so we've got to have a bit of patience.
And what did Zero, I guess, like about your profile? Was it what you mentioned on stage where you had a little bit of exposure to, like, I forget exactly what you said on stage, but you said, you know, here I did this, and here I was exposed to, like, in Dropbox I was exposed to, like, scaling. And, like, what did they really like about your profile?
Do you know what? To be honest, I think I've always worked for subsidiaries, right? Always for U.S. subsidiaries, so where the head office is in San Francisco or Seattle or whatever. And I think the U.S. is a subsidiary. It just happens to be the subsidiary of a New Zealand company.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of the people that have worked in the business have always worked for head office. I'm used to working for a subsidiary where I don't create strategy, I can influence it, but really I'm executing headquarters strategy.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, you know, I've worked for large businesses, small businesses, but always in software. So I think most of the people that have been running the business in the Americas in the past have not come from a software background. They've come from banking, finance, hardware. This is a software business. So yep. I think that's all I've ever done is software. I'm yep. not an accountant. We have plenty of great accountants, which are awesome, but this is a software business.
Got it. I was doing a little bit of digging online.
Yep.
Couldn't find much.
Oh, that could be because of my amazing skeleton. Twitter profile.
Couldn't find much. But one thing that your LinkedIn profile says is that you want to be part of a team that builds a 100-year company.
Yeah.
And how do you think you can play a part in ensuring that Xero is around for 100 years?
So I'll tell you a really interesting stat. The guy that used to run product at LinkedIn is a guy called Deep Nashir, who's super smart. And his stat was that only 5% of tech companies make it to 20 years in their original form. They either disappear or get bought, whatever. So LinkedIn didn't make it. Google's just made it. So I should probably reframe it to 20 years because that's Kay. Probably a more reasonable Kay. Goal.
Maybe a LinkedIn profile update.
I need to update my LinkedIn profile. But I think the premise is that a lot of companies get so focused on 13 weeks hitting their quarterly number that they make bad choices that have long-term repercussions. So a company that I don't think operates like that is Amazon. Doesn't operate like that. They yeah. they have a customer obsession, and they're yeah. not worried about the 13 weeks or the 26 weeks or the 39 weeks. They're playing a long game. So it's more around getting the right people in the right roles and not sort of falling into the trap of short-termism. It's always a challenge, right? Because without a short-term, there isn't a long-term, but you don't want to trade off the long-term just yeah. to have hit that short-term goal.
But would you not say that, like, Xero is also super customer experience focused?
I totally.
Well?
And that's why I think that's what really drew me. I think they do have a customer obsession.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, if you look at the donut, for lack of a better word, it's term, it's got kind of a customer in the center.
Yep.
I think that's super important.
Okay. So you said also that this is your third XeroCon?
It is.
So what were you doing at the other XeroCons? Part of Dropbox, was it?
Yeah, well, one was SurveyMonkey and one was Dropbox. Yeah, okay. So we were an exhibitor in Australia. So okay. The first one I went to, it was like a cult. I never saw so many. And Rod was walking around, and I knew Rod.
He used to go around on the skateboard.
Yeah, well, he was just walking around, and it was like he was a rock star, you know? And they were, oh, Rod. And I was like, wow, this is kind of different, so... I think that really appealed to me. And, you know, my wife's a New Zealander. I started my time in New Zealand. I have a lot of time for, you know, New Zealand. And to create a global company out of Wellington is actually an amazing
yeah.
achievement.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at Canada, you've got kind of Shopify kind of doing the same sort yeah. of thing. It's really cool.
Yeah. Have you noticed any changes, I guess, like from the Xero? Because the market is different here, right?
Yeah.
So... I guess this is your first XeroCon in the U.S.
Yeah.
The last two XeroCons you went to, were they like the two previous years, or is it many years ago?
No, I think last 2 years ago and then the year before that. So they're all, or within the last 4 years, I've been to two.
Okay.
So.
And anything you notice different between the XeroCons you've been to there, any different trends that you've picked up on?
Honestly, it feels the same. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's a little smaller here than the ones in Australia, but it has the same vibe. And mm-hmm. the people, I've been to a lot of offices in 30 days. The people all feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've done a good job of hiring for culture.
Okay.
You can tell a Xero here seems to be the same as a Xero in Auckland or Wellington or Melbourne or San Francisco or, you know, I'm going to go to... Vancouver, Calgary, Toronto in a few weeks, so okay. I'm going to see all the Canadian Xeros. So
okay.
that feels the same. It feels like the community aspect is real. I think Trent might have told me this story. So Trent runs Australia, and he told me this story about, and it's not just our community, it's more importantly, it's the bookkeepers and accountants. So there was a bookkeeper that posted on a forum, whether it was LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever, saying that her husband had gotten sick and she needed to take care of him. And would anyone take care of her customers? Well, she was taking care of her husband. And apparently so many people volunteered to help. So people took care of our customers, actually brought her food, and actually gave her money.
Wow.
While she was not working to try and, you know, like, get her through. Like, that is a... That's... I never heard of anything like that in any software business that I've ever worked in. That it was... It is that tight of a community. And even last night when we did the jam-off at the partner dinner, you know, the fact that one partner had brought her jam and Craig Walker had brought his jam and Steve and I did like a blind taste test. That's a different experience, yeah. Right? From, and even today, like we sat in there with the investors and one of, not the analysts, sorry, and one of the, no, they were investors. And one of the investors, he was an analyst and it was his 30th birthday. And one of the zeros went out and basically got some candles and cobbled together a birthday cake mm-hmm. for him at lunch.
Yeah.
Like, that's just
good culture.
It's cool. It's very cool.
Yeah, awesome. So, is there any like new initiatives that we can expect from Zero in the Americas under your leadership, or like, are you? Is it too early for you to kind of get into that because you're still understanding the game plan to a certain extent, or are there new initiatives that you're able to speak about which you'd like to deploy in the Americas?
Look, I think the one thing that I would say is partnerships are going to be key for us. There's no way you can get to scale in a direct model in the Americas. It's just, I mean, it will take you forever and it will cost a fortune.
In
so Stripe is a good one.
Yeah.
Stripe is a good example. PwC is a good example. Yeah. We're talking to a bunch of other, you know, pretty large tech companies that are honestly pretty excited about how we've managed to get to small business because mm-hmm. it's a very difficult segment to serve cost effectively.
Yep.
So I think figuring out things that we're going to do in that space, so, you know, we're sort of bumping around a few different ideas, but nothing I can give you solidly, but I would say Stripe, I'm really a big fan of payroll. I love what it does for a small business, payments, and I think things like that we're going to definitely look for.
So we can expect more of those kind of larger partnerships.
Yeah, and I think, you know, PwC is a global partnership, right? And when you listen to what they're saying, they sound like a software company. They don't sound like an accounting company.
But what's different about that partnership? Because PwC has been using Xero for many, many years now.
I can jump in on that because I've worked on this with the team.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. I'll give you. So with PwC, so what was so at the basic level, what it was is so PwC's worked for Xero for years, but in Australia and New Zealand had an agreement, and at a really basic level in the UK, those partnerships took kind of years to actually establish just with how they operated. This global alliance agreement is really what it is. So the US signed up last week as soon as that went. Mm-hmm. The US wasn't able to roll out Xero to any of their offices. Now they're set up and can. Pretty much it allows them now, like over in Asia, they could roll it out that quickly too. Mm-hmm. Asia just, it's not an automatic sign up, but they pretty much can very quickly just sign on now that the global agreement is in place.
Okay.
So in terms of their, you know, having such a big customer base across the world, actually a huge chunk of their base hasn't had access to Xero. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, the thing that you're kind of talking to is that PwC has actually said, on top of that, we really want to build to your APIs and we want to build more innovations for our customers. Mm-hmm. So this is actually also about kind of innovating on top of Xero.
Yep.
They've done that in New Zealand with Cashflow Coach is the first one, but now they want to start rolling those type of innovations out everywhere.
Okay. Yeah.
So
okay.
That's awesome. What it means.
Yeah. So think about the thing that I got excited about was great brand, super trusted brand, but talking about serving small business, which is something they just they can only afford to do that with software.
Yeah.
Can't do that with people.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, some of the things we could do with them and other partners, you imagine that I can imagine a future where, you know, I'm an accountant or bookkeeper and I'm actually running like a managed service provider. I provide you everything you need to run your business, the vertical line of business app, the accounting app, all the other stuff, the payroll, and it just comes as a package by somebody like a PwC who is going to take care of it. And I don't have to think about what should I go and buy. It's just like, well, hey, you're in retail, you just use this. You're a law firm, just use this.
Yep.
And I'll charge you a monthly fee for it all. And if you add people, I'll charge a little bit more.
Yep.
And if something goes wrong, you call me or email me. And if people go, you kind of, because small businesses, they can't handle big changes in sort of pay, like CapEx just kills them.
Yep.
They don't know who to call if something goes wrong, and they're generally, if you're using desktop software, they're never on the latest version. So that the cloud solves all those problems.
And I thought it was interesting when you said that, you know, they're speaking more like a software company. You're someone that comes from software company backgrounds. Mm-hmm. What sort of things trigger that kind of comment? Because I personally think that that's probably necessary in the space to kind of think more like a software company rather than an accounting firm.
Yep.
So what kind of triggers that comment?
I think they know that if they want to get into that space, they have to do it with software, and they know that the in terms of value-based charging, it's not going to be for compliance and kind of the that sort of work. It's going to be around advisory. What should I do? In the future, who knows how that gets done, right? If you think about AI and ML, that's kind of the future of that.
Yep.
And there's a view, I think there was an article written, there's actually several articles been written about, you know, software is eating the world. Like everyone's going to become a software business. Banks are trying to disrupt themselves. Disrupt means generally technology. I think some of the big firms, and medium and small ones, have worked out that, hey, I need to figure out a way to differentiate myself. I need a way. There's only so much revenue I can get out of the Fortune 500.
Yep.
Everyone can see this massive, you know, install base of small businesses, but you have to figure out how to serve it at scale.
Okay. Moving on to a different topic. Difference between, let's say, Canada and the U.S. markets, like, what have you kind of been able to observe? And I imagine, like, most of your focus is on the U.S. market, though was a pretty nice-sized Canadian presence yesterday. Yep. I remember coming to XeroCons many years back, and there was maybe four Canadians there. So so to see when someone, I think it was Will that said there was 250 Canadians there last night, that was spectacular. So, like, how much of your time is actually dedicated towards looking at Canada? And maybe you can comment on some of the differences that you see in the markets.
Yeah, well, let's talk about differences first, and then we'll talk about focus. The U.S., 8,000 banks. Canada, 5, right? So that's straight away.
Yep.
Canada, 5 banks. Australia and New Zealand, 4 banks. UK, 8 banks. Quite similar. U.S., 32% of small businesses use an accountant or bookkeeper. Canada, 80%. Mm-hmm. Canada, quarterly reporting. You know, the U.S., not the same. So I think, if I think about a market that is the closest to other markets, we've been very successful in. Canada looks like that. Now we've got to do things, bank feeds, local currency. There's some stuff that we have to get right, but we have put boots on the ground there because we know that it's an opportunity for us, and we're actually getting some traction. Hence, there's all these partners that have come here, right? To me, that's a leading indicator.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I loved is the fact that I think 50% of all the partners that are here are not certified, meaning they're pretty new. So they're obviously coming here for a reason, right? So I'm excited by that because it's not the same old, we're not preaching to the converted. For whatever reason, there's some new partners that have gone, hey, this is something we really need to look at seriously, which I get excited about. So Canada is definitely really high up on the list. So I reckon I couldn't give you an exact number, but America's super important. We've had people there for quite a while, right? So we're going to go more hyper-local. We're going to focus on 10 communities. We're going to invest hard in those communities, and we're going to prove that we can actually make it work, and we can show, you know, steady progress. And once we can prove that we've nailed it, then we'll scale it across the U.S.
Okay.
There's no point going, you know, an inch deep and a mile wide. Mm-hmm. But if I take Canada, you know, Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver, that's 50% of the small businesses in those three cities. So we're going to prioritize those three cities in the short run. And same thing, once we can prove that we're...
Did you say Montreal?
No, I did not. I knew you were going to ask me that. I thought if I just started at Toronto and went west, you wouldn't notice, but of course you would. Yeah, I mean, obviously the language, we have to figure that out. That's a bigger issue for us because we only have English everywhere. And there's obviously people in Montreal that are buying it. Would it be great to have it in French? Yeah, French, German, Spanish, Portuguese, etc. So I think, you know, that's a future state for us across the board.
Got it. Maybe you can speak about, are there any global trends that you're currently monitoring in the market that might affect Xero, the direction of Xero, and the cloud accounting space? Any global trends that you're following?
Yeah, I thought Steve nailed it when he was talking about, you know, government's sort of open banking and yep. moving in that direction. So I think governments, Australia's talking about it. I think even Canada's rumbling sort of open banking. The U.S. mumblings, what that will look like. So I think more of governments pushing the requirement from a compliance perspective to know who's getting paid when and how much is one thing. I also think some of the big tech companies are going to disrupt banking. You know, there's think about some of the big tech companies that are getting into the payment space. You know, is Apple a bank? Yeah. I don't know. They have a credit card. Uber's got a credit card. Mm-hmm. You look what Amazon's doing. So I think disruption's going to come in the U.S., probably not from regulation with 8,000 banks. It's probably what you'd expect from a country like the U.S. will come from private sector.
Yeah.
And that will, you know, that will drive some interesting things. There's new banks popping up. So I think if I'm in a traditional old world bank, I think that's going to be an interesting space. You're going to have to think pretty fast, like what business are you in? And they're all talking about becoming software businesses and disrupting themselves. But they're playing with a model that is, you know, in some cases hundreds of years old, very risk averse, slow moving. So that's going to be an interesting, it's going to be interesting to watch because the Facebooks and the Apples and the Amazons, they don't wait.
Yep.
They just execute.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, so how do you think like the delays in open banking, like how much of a negative impact is that really going to be on Xero at the end of the day? Because North America's lagging there, right?
Yeah. Look, I think things like open banking are long-term ultimately positive for us because it means that they have to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the U.S., it'll just come from a different place.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, accountants have been hearing about robots taking their jobs for many, many years,
yeah.
and there's a lot of fear around that, and
yeah.
some of it is justified, some of it isn't. I mean, you look at, like, even, you know, great presentation from Sean earlier. I don't know if you caught
that. I didn't
see
it. I think I was doing an interview.
There was a, he put up a website, willrobotstakeyourjob.com, yeah. and put in lawyers, and it said 10% chance, and he put in different professions, and
oh, right.
low percent, and then put in accountants, and it's 94% chance. You know? So, I guess, like, what's your view on that? Because sometimes when that message is pushed to accountants, they kind of say, yeah, we've been hearing this for so long. What's your view on that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long you've been in the technology game or around it, but I remember very clearly when, you know, e-commerce was really starting to kick off in the late 90s, how it was going to just, there was going to be no more bricks and mortar
mm-hmm.
retail, right? And, well, that clearly hasn't happened. Has it put pressure on bricks and mortar retail? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Have they had to be innovative? Yep. But it still exists. Do you remember how the internet was going to put newspapers out of business and TV mm-hmm. out of business? They're still around. I think
they kind of did put newspapers.
Well, they're
more digital now.
They're
right?
definitely. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, print definitely. So has it changed the landscape? Yes. What do I think in terms of AI and ML? To be honest,
that was my next question. So that's
great. Well, I mean, so they're the same thing basically. You want to talk about robots and AI and ML? I think what will happen is, and this will happen across the board, things that are, you know, low value, dangerous, repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
I think those things will be, machines will do more and more of that. But the value and where humans come in is interpreting that and giving advice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I think the accountants and bookkeepers that move to advisory services with AI and ML, because that will give them a whole bunch of insight and that can help small businesses to be more, all businesses to be more successful. I think that's the future. And it's probably a lot further away than what we think. Like, generally with technology, with a major shift, it takes longer and ultimately will be a bigger impact. But it's, mm-hmm. you know, e-commerce was going to change the world in like 3 years, and we're like 25 years later.
Yeah.
So I think you and I probably won't have to worry about what that's going to do.
Okay.
It's definitely going to change things, and I think
I would agree with that.
Some companies will embrace it. I think you have to figure out a way, how do you use a new technology to your advantage as opposed to pretend it's not happening. It's like if you're manufacturing stagecoaches when the cars came out.
Yeah.
You could pretend it wasn't happening
yep.
or you could figure out how do I become a car company.
Yep. Interesting.
I don't want to cut you off. You do have another podcast
interview. Do I?
Yeah. Mark.
Okay.
Jamie's waiting
Ryan,
for
Ryan, nice to meet you.
So
okay. Great.
You.
Yeah. Very good.
Take care.
Appreciate your time.
Thank
Where
you
am I going now?
Lauren, do you want to show
Yeah, actually, we're done with